Well, welcome to today's episode of Sexopedia, where your host, Sarah Gibson, is here to provide valuable insights and advice on all things sex and relationships. Dr. Mawali is a renowned sex and relationship expert who has helped countless individuals and couples improve their sex lives and restore passionate connections. With over 10 years of experience in this field, she brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise to the table. In today's episode, we will be exploring some key questions that many people have about sex in long-term relationships. So sit back, relax, and we'll get ready to engage in a fascinating conversation with Dr. Mawali. So welcome, Dr. Mawali.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited for this conversation.
Well, thank you for being here. You have so many roles, like you're a sexologist, a clinical psychologist, a published researcher. I'm wondering, how would you like to know about you?
Well, what's important is for me to kind of think about all of these roles are being connected. So I'm drawn to sex therapy because I was hearing from lots of my clients that's a field that they are, that's a part of their life that they don't have enough information about. And issues in their long-term relationship, especially around sex, it really can impact quality of people's life. And that's why I got advanced training in sex therapy.
Yeah. Could you please share a bit about your journey of becoming a sexologist? What exactly motivated you to become a sexologist?
Great question. So ever since I was a child, I grew up in a family that they are more sexually positive compared to the rest of the community of people I had. I grew up in Iran, and relative to my peers, I had more information about sexual health. And I learned from early on, it's important to be able to talk about sex. There's nothing shameful about it. And when I became a psychologist, I had the same attitude. I kept people asking about their sexual health because I believe sexual health is really important. Yeah. Whoever comes to my office, I ask them about the quality of sleep, eating habits, and sexual health. And what I've noticed is that there are so many people that they have so many questions that they were coming to me for other issues, but they didn't have any other place to talk about their questions about sex or process the emotion. So what I realized, I was doing a lot of providing space for my clients, but they were coming to me for other stuff around sex and sexuality. So I went and I got more training in sex therapy. I became an ASAC certified sex therapist, and I created my podcast, Sexology, just to give my clients more information that was missing in their life. And that's how I was drawn to this work. And ever since then, I've been doing this work, which is such a rewarding career.
Yeah, I really love what you're doing because while sex is sometimes a really sensitive topic for many people, because it's usually something you wouldn't like to talk about as a dinner topic, but it does play a very essential role in our life. Like somehow it determines our relationship quality, your connection with the other people, and including how you feel about yourself. And I say it's like a human instinctual activity, but meanwhile, as you said, many of us, we lack sex positive perspective in it. And yes, we do need some safe space with professionals where we can talk about our concerns and receive professional support.
I agree with you, and I think the cornerstone of having a healthy sexual relationship with yourself and others is having access to accurate information. So that's why, yes, I think podcasts like yours is so important, because it provides the information that's missing in people's life and fill the gap.
Right, exactly. And that's what we're trying to do, just to give people a clue about something related to their sex life and hopefully one day help them to solve some concerns. And well, I read through a lot of your articles, and also I listened to a couple episodes of podcasts. I found one of your expertise is about marriage, especially sexless marriage. Would you mind explain us a bit, what are the common reasons you think lead to a sexless marriage?
Absolutely. Before I talk about sexless marriage, I want to talk about how people define sexless marriages, because that's a question that I often get a lot. So, sexless marriage is typically defined as a relationship when the couple have sex fewer than 10 times per year. And there is this disappointment, this discouragement around it. One thing I want to highlight that there are about 2% of population that they are asexual. And being asexual meaning that you can be in a satisfying relationship and sex isn't important for you. But for majority of people that we see and we know, if they are in a sexless relationship, which the numbers are quite relatively higher than what people think, in the United States is something somewhere between 20% between for longer term relationships, is that something that gradually happens to people's life. It's not something that happened in a vacuum. It's usually indicative of other relational problem or health issues. What I see often is people are very passionate. When they first meet each other, their very sex is very spontaneous and effortless. But what happens is a setback happens, some stressor happens, and gradually they have sex less and less, and they end up being in a sexless relationship if they're not doing anything about it. You asked me about the reason. So some of the common reason is that high stress. So again, our desire is very available to us when we are meeting someone initially. That's what we're doing. We're thinking about them. We're fantasizing about the date we're going to go with them. And that's something that anticipation also builds desire and the novelty. But when we are in a long-term relationship, the novelty wears off. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you or your partner or sex life. But sex needs to be a priority, something that you put on your schedule in a way, so you will be able to have time and space and energy to engage in it. So many people don't prioritize sex in their life, and this they have children, something happens, their stress is higher, and that what leads them to have less frequent sex. And if you're not sexually connected with your partner, I hear often that many of my clients tell me that I live with a roommate. I feel like I have no sexual spark with my partner. We haven't had sex for years, and it feels like I'm living with my partner. So it feels even awkward to reconnect. So that could be one reason. The other common reason that I see often is that people experience some kind of sexual challenge. For example, maybe it's a heterosexual relationship, a male partner struggle with erectile functioning. Like maybe they lose their erection, maybe they have premature ejaculation, and it leads them to feel inadequate. They feel shame around it, and they start avoiding sex. And because they're avoiding sex, their partner also feels like, okay, they're not interested. And that can lead to couples being in a sexless relationship when they are not addressing it. So it could be relational, it could be physiological or sexual dysfunction. And physiological, sometimes we go to different seasons of life. Some people go through like middle age, for women, menopause, or for men could be changes in their physiological functioning, maybe side effect of medication, and that also requires them updating their sex script, that if it's not happening, then that leads to people not have frequent sexual experiences and be sexually dissatisfied in the relationship.
Right. I think it's really common where people, novelty just wears off in a marriage or any forms of long-term relationships because, as you said, like there are many other aspects in life, like kids, life, you're more than just romantic partners, you're also life partners. Are there any tricks for people to reignite those sparks?
Absolutely. My invitation for people who are in this position, start thinking about when this cycle started, right? Kind of like really be curious about when did your sex life change? Was it after having kids? Was it after some relational fight that you had? Maybe there was an infidelity. Identifying the starting point is really, really important. And then after starting looking at that, kind of thinking about with yourself, kind of thinking, what could be a roadmap for us that we can move from this place to the place that works for me? So you kind of thinking about having some ideas about what kind of a rebuilding and rekindling look like. And if you have no idea, that's okay. We can definitely talk about that as well. And the next step is talking about it with your partner. I think that's very key, and that's often very difficult. There are a few tips that I want people to keep in mind when they want to communicate this with a partner. First of all, I think it's really important to talk about it in a designated time. We don't want to kind of bring it up randomly. So, like, we want to set ourselves for success so we can tell our partner there's something about our connection that I want to talk to you about it. When would be a good time? When would you have 5 minutes or 10 minutes? So they know that this is a conversation that's important for you. And then I would recommend, instead of saying that you always reject me or you never want sex, like starting from the place of you, focus on yourself, like using I statement, like I missed having those connecting experiences with you. I missed having sexual intimacy with you. Kind of starting from that and asking them about their experience, asking this open-ended question about what they want, and really listen to the partner. I think that's something else that people are often struggling with. We're asking a question and we're not listening to our partner, and see where they are and if they are motivated to work on this or not. It's important or not. And one of the key points for couples is to talk about what is the meaning of sex for us, right? So is it about connection? Is it about adventure? Is it about kind of like self-expression? Is it your love language? So it's really important to talk about underlying meaning, because most people, I guess, like no one is a very broad term, likes to feel that their partner wants them only for satisfying their needs. People want to feel desired, they want to feel wanted. So you want to kind of like connect it to that meaning part. And then afterward, together, think about creating some kind of a space in your schedule to have some type of intimacy. If you haven't had sex with your partner for the longest time, it requires some buildup. So maybe you can kind of start with having half an hour per week and kind of like doing erotic massage, or you can even do some fun sex games, something that's kind of like help you guys to reconnect slowly, emotionally and sexually, and then building up from there. The other thing is that if there's been an issue with sexual functioning, I recommend you to book an appointment and go to sex therapist to kind of see what are options out there. Because no matter what sexual functioning issue you have, there are a galaxy of options, whether psychological or physiological, that can help you to address it and build the confidence.
Right. And a lot of times when we're saying your disconnect with your partner sexually, usually when you're in a marriage, it because you have to deal with a lot of day-to-day stuff. So one thing you said is really important is to identify first the starting point where you stop being interested in each other sexually. But it's really hard to like identify this point, because usually when you're dealing with day-to-day life, the magic feeling just is not going away in just 1 second, or it's not like a switch that you can turn on or turn off. It's usually being wore off by day-to-day stuff. So how should we like navigate this, and how should we just to get to know the signs we are like losing interest in each other sexually?
One of the questions I ask my people who are coming, my clients for the first time, is that if you were on vacation, how often would you want to have sex? Right? So kind of I encourage you, like listeners, to think about that. If you're on vacation with your partner, do you want sex once a week? Do you want having sex every day or multiple times during the day? So that can help you to think about where you are in your baseline.
Oh,
And
yeah.
if where you are right now is very far away from the baseline, right? If you kind of say on vacation, I want to have sex every day, but in reality, it could be once a week, and now it's 3 months past and we haven't had sex, it's an indicator that you don't want to connect with the partner. In more extreme situation is when you kind of stop seeing your partner as a lover. You see them as a roommate, you see them as a family member, and that's also a sign that that's you need to address the erotic part of the relationship.
Yeah, this is such a great question, because I was just asking myself, like, if we're on a vacation, how many times we like to have sex with my partner? And yeah, because my question is, sometimes it's really hard to distinguish when couples need to be reconnect with one another, or they're completely losing interest with each other. I think this is such a good question, because it not only like clarify if without stress, a lot of stresses in life, well, how many times we like to connect with each other sexually, but also can help us distinguish, am I completely like not interested in this person, or it's just like because of a lot of things in life, and so we just like drifting apart, or would love to reconnect. Yeah.
Yes, and I think the other thing is in reality, when you are on vacation, how often do you have sex? Because for people that the issue is not having space and prioritizing time is that when they're on vacation, they have sex. But for people that are kind of issue is more complicated, even when they are taking a vacation, issues still exist. So they're not connecting sexually, even at vacation as well.
Yeah, right. Well, what are the common methodologies that sex health experts or sexologists would use to help couples who are facing this situation?
Well, the first thing is kind of identifying what are the issues, what are the setback. Is it physiological? Is it psychological? Is it relational? Or is it sexual skill based, right? Because it's important to identify the origin of the problem so we can work on that. And oftentimes in reality, it could be a combination of things. And what's really important is for couples to think about addressing it as a team, right? Like even if the issue is physiological, if you're thinking about, okay, I have pain during sex, or I have issues with erectile dysfunction, if you're thinking about this is your problem, then that puts us in this situation of you go deal with it and we're not addressing it as a teammate. So I think it's really important to think about how you can support each other. And if it's relational, I think processing emotions, processing resentment is really, really important. Because sometimes we think that we feel pressure that, okay, I have this emotion, I talked about it, I should be over it now. But if we're not processing the emotion, it will show up in our body as low desire or issues with performance.
Right. And actually, I believe both physiological and psychological factors play very important roles in sex drive, because sex drive is also a psychological phenomenon that's only impacted by how do you feel, but also how well is your like physical condition. And one thing that's more common than expected is erectile dysfunction that's affecting a lot of relationships and marriages. I'm wondering, like, how does like erectile dysfunction would affect one from a psychological or like a sexologist perspective?
Great question. You know, sometimes, especially when people are younger, how it shows itself, it's on performance anxiety. And people of any age can have performance anxiety. But whenever we are younger, we have less of a health issues and our erectile functioning is more psychological. What happens is that people have this expectation, men that have this expectation, that I have to be able to get an erection on demand. And when they have a struggle with, when they struggle with erectile functioning, or they lose the erection once, and then after that, majority of people kind of start getting anxious. They feel like, oh God, there is something wrong with me, because most people, they don't talk about it. It's common for everyone of every age at times to struggle with getting an erection. Maybe you drank so much. Maybe you have stress. Maybe this is a new relationship. But then now when it's in your mind, that can turn to this vicious cycle. And how it shows itself to the in the relationship is when we lose an erection, if you are with our partner, we withdraw. So we think about, okay, I lost my erection, let's stop. And then our partner oftentimes feels that the partner lost their erection because they're not attractive. Like that's what people think,
Yeah.
versus thinking about, okay, maybe there are two stress, like stress, maybe there are performance anxiety. And when you're withdrawing, you are validating that message in your partner's mind. So I think communication is really important around that. And what I invite people to do is that kind of explore giving pleasure to your partner, even when you lose your erection. So you wouldn't feel the pressure of being able to, the sex with the erection is the only kind of thinking about the sex with the erection is the only way to go. So I think that's something that's important to talk about and have an open conversation outside the bedroom with the partner. Saying that, you know, sometimes when I'm excited about having sex, or sometimes when I stress, I'm struggling with performance and has nothing to do with you. So I think even having that conversation can be helpful, and asking for your partner's help, right? Because sometimes when we are in a relationship longer term, as we age, maybe we need more physical stimulation. And because we're not verbalizing it, that also impacts erectile functioning.
Well, I agree with you. And sometimes many, especially male, they face this kind of dilemma because from one thing that they know they're suffering from erectile dysfunction, from the other aspect is that the society actually stigmatizes erectile dysfunction and thinking it as a loss of masculinity. So they're really ashamed to talk about it, especially bring it to the table with his partner. And yeah, how would you address this issue?
I think that kind of knowing that you are a worthy lover, right, with or without an erection, just for your partner, there's so many different ways that you can please them. You can give them oral sex, you have hand, you have, there are sex toys that you can engage in, you have this erotic mind. So your penis is not the only asset you're bringing to the bedroom. So I think that's really important. So don't focus on hard penis as the main point of sexual experience. And also talk with your partner about what other things that are in your erotic menu. What are some of the things that doesn't require intercourse that can be exciting for both of you? And kind of have those and your list of the things that you can do. And the other issue is that if you are struggling, ask for help, right? So I think like one of the things that many men struggle with, as you said, they feel like it's not masculine to ask help, or it's a sign of weakness if you are reaching out for help. But sometimes when you're reaching out for help, the solution can be education, could be learning some tools and strategies. So there are tons of solutions. And if you are not addressing it, you will not be able to reach your potential as a lover. I mean, it can impact the relationship. So it's really important to, if you're struggling, the sooner that you get help, the better it will be for the relationship.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one because I think erectile dysfunction, I think it's a much, much more common phenomenon than we expected. And it's just like normal physiology, physical or mental malfunction, just like every other like disease or illness. But the other question that lingers me around, because I don't really know a lot about erectile dysfunction. Whenever I see this word, it's usually on some porn sites, like saying some pills can cure this thing. I'm wondering, is this actually something treatable, or is this something like physical or mental? And how can we do about it professionally?
Excellent question. Absolutely. And I think there is like a difference between erectile unpredictability and erectile dysfunction, right? As I said, that majority of people at times struggle with erectile functioning, then there is nothing wrong with that. But if majority of the time you have an issue with getting an erection, or after getting an erection, you lose it immediately. And one of the challenging time for people to lose an erection is like upon intercourse. They feel kind of like anxious then. Then maybe that there's, it requires you doing some investigation. It could be any of the things that you talked about. It could be psychological, maybe because you have high stress, maybe you have anxiety, or sometimes people are really into something that they're not talking about it with the partner, right? So kind of like you are having this kink or fetish and there's something that you're interested in and you're not talking about it with your partner. And because what you're doing is not exciting, then maybe there's an issue with getting an erection. So that could be a psychological part. Or if you feel your partner putting you down, there's a galaxy of option for psychological issue. The other possible areas of challenges are physiological. What erection is a blood flow to your penis. So if there is any cardiovascular issues, it can impact the quality of your erection. So if you have any kind of like issues with high cholesterol, if you have issues with your weight, all of those things can impact the blood flow, and that can cause struggles with erectile functioning. And also the medication side effects. That's also something else that many people don't know. The side effect of the medication can cause you struggle with erectile functioning. So there are kind of like issues with nervous system, like illnesses like MS. Those things also can cause people to have issues with erectile functioning. My invitation for people is the first thing to do is to go to a sex therapist or sexologist. So someone that can help you to see where the issue is. So addressing if it's psychological through sex therapy, building confidence, building skills, that's very, very important. And for people who are struggling with physiological issues, I tell people is that your lack of getting an erection, it could be a check engine showing that there is a bigger problem happening, right? Maybe you have a heart issue, so cardiovascular issue that you have to check. So it's important to talk about it with your own urologist. Your urologist can do a number of different tests, like testing your testosterone level, blood flow. You can do all sorts of different scans. Just the issue could be with your nervous system. It could be with hormonal level, or it could be with losing sensitivity. So in the office, if you're going with urologist, there are medications you can take. There are great sex toys that can help you to get an erection, whether you're using a cock ring or penis pump. Those are also great options. And some people choose to do surgery and they get implants, and that's also another option. So I tell my clients all the time, if you want a hard erection, if you want a hard penis, you can get it. It's just a matter of getting, like, finding a way to address it.
Yes, that's such a great news, guys. If you want a hard penis, you can get it. The other like questions that I have for a very long time is about premature ejaculation, because a lot of times when we were talking about ED, we're also somehow correlated with premature ejaculation. What is the difference? Like, I know what is premature ejaculation, but a lot of times when people are talking about it, it's just giving it a very mysterious vibe, like it's some secret male urology disease that it's really hard to cure. Could you please like clear up that a bit for us?
Yeah, of course. First of all, there is this myth online that anything under like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, I've seen it on Instagram and all social media, and I'm sure people have seen it. Oh, that's premature ejaculation. No, it's not. Like medically, it's if you are losing an erection under 2 minutes, I would say, like that is what's considered premature ejaculation, or kind of like one of other criteria is before you want to ejaculate. So there are a number of different reasons that can contribute to that. One is the way you masturbate. Kind of like, I invite your listeners to think about when you were younger, right? Most people masturbate, boys, in the shower, in the bathroom. They want to do it as quick as possible so no one's discovering them. In a way, you are conditioning yourself to be able to come quickly. Could be like byproduct of like bad habits. For some people, it could be anxiety related. So there are a number of different exercises that you can do that can help you to gather more control over it. Some people kind of have this poor way of managing fantasies. They can kind of adjust your fantasies to help you to last longer. Or you can practice embodiment exercises, because what premature ejaculation is that you're not able to kind of like examine where you are. So if zero is like no erection and 10 is ejaculation, you can change the sensation when you're seeing that you are going toward 8 or 9. But many people, when we're not in our body, when we're thinking about other stuff, we're not able to notice when things are building up. So when we notice, we're at the point of no return. But if we are in our body, if we're noticing that, okay, the arousal is building up, maybe I can change the position. Maybe
Oh,
I
yeah.
can do something different. Maybe I can pleasure my partner. So part of it also is to kind of bring awareness in your body and how to tackle it.
Yes, sometimes it's all about how we see it appropriately and also giving it really evidence-based and scientific explanation. It's not just like reading little blogs on porn sites and thinking erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation as something unspeakable or something that's, mysterious. Well, and a lot of times these two dysfunction actually related to performance anxiety. And could you please like let us know what are the common reasons that lead to performance anxiety and how should we address it, this issue?
Well, number one is kind of high stress, right? When we are feeling stressed, it will be hard for us to be able to experience arousal, and that cause an issue for people to get an erection. One interesting point is sometimes people even take Viagra, kind of like, or other medication that helps them, supposed to help them with getting an erection. But what happens is that the medication doesn't work because they have so much stress in the body. So I think like that could be part of what people are struggling with performance anxiety. So that is part of the issue. The other psychological issue for performance anxiety is not having good sexual skills, right? Like so many people think about sex is about intercourse, but the way that you engage with your partner, with the foreplay, all sorts of things that can help you to kind of created erotic space. So you will have time to kind of build arousal, and your partner will have time to kind of like get ready. So sometimes, if we give ourselves enough time, that can help us to build arousal. So sometimes I have many clients that as soon as they get an erection, because they're so worried about losing it, that's when they want to have intercourse. And then that leads them to have kind of like this escalated stress. Their partner is not ready. So now they have to be able to last longer, and that impact the quality of experience. But if you have this idea that great sex is so many different components, so you can strengthen those other components. And if you're getting a hard erection, that's a bonus.
Sometimes it really depends on how we see it, because if we're seeing sex as simply getting your penis hard and ready for the penetration, then yes, if things are not going well, you're probably going to feel really anxious, but it's actually not. It's actually about a lot of methods like what you've mentioned. You can use your hands, you can have a really sensual aura sex session, and things works. And we just mentioned like something about Viagra, and that's also like a question many people they're curious about, is that will Viagra lead to some side effects?
It's really important for people to consult with their physician, right? So if they have issues with cardiovascular issues, other serious medical issues, that's something that maybe Viagra is not a good fit for them. But if it's prescribed by your physician, there is often like minimal side effect. But one of the things that I know that sometimes people take it without it being necessary, right? They think about it as being an insurance when they have no issue, and then they get kind of conditioned. They think about, okay, if I don't have my medication, I won't be able to get an erection. So that kind of adds another level of complexity. So my invitation for people is that if it's not something that's prescribed by your physician, that's something that's must due to other medical reason, I would recommend people to kind of like use it at different times, but like also have kind of like you build this muscle of being able to at times having great sexual experiences, not relying on erection. So you can build your confidence knowing that you will be able to get an erection on your own without the medication.
And sometimes when people are having a hard time getting aroused, there is this way to watch some pornography and just create this vibe and make sure you're in the right environment that to get yourself ready for this session. And how would you think about like the pornography's role in like, a marriage or in a long-term relationship? Or even their, how will this impact their sexual relationship?
Well, it is a very personal decision, right? It's a preference that goes with people's values. So my invitation for people is to kind of examine their values and think about, okay, is this using porn aligned with that or not? But one thing that's really important is to be honest with yourself. We hear at times people talk about sex addiction diagnosis, right? Like what happens is sometimes men get caught watching porn, their partner is not happy about it. There's a value discrepancy. They say, I'm not going to engage in it. They have no interest of stopping, but they just don't want to have the conversation with their partner. And then their partner catch them again and say, oh, you have a sex addiction. In my experience as a psychologist and sex therapist, porn is not an issue for majority of the people. It can be part of your sexual health plan. Many couples that I have, they use it to build psychological arousal. Right. It's a quick way of watching something together and get excited. But it's important to have conversation about it with your partner, be honest with yourself, and kind of agree on type of the content you're watching. Another thing that if you're watching porn with your partner is important is to know that your partner is main event. Right. So it's like going on a date. There is this movie showing in the background. Maybe you're looking at it, but your partner is the main event. So if you're fixated on porn, your partner might feel unseen, invalidated, and it can cause issues. But majority of people in relationship, they masturbate and they watch porn. So it's not something that shows the relationship is problematic if your partner is masturbating and watching porn. But you want to make sure that you have honest conversation about it.
That's right. One thing I'm curious about is that what's the difference between simply like to watch porn and being addicted to porn?
Well, I think one way of knowing about it is that is what's your relationship with watching porn? Like can be with sex as well, right? Sometimes I compare it to your relationship with food. There is nothing wrong with food, but if every night you're having 5 pints of ice cream, right, you're trying to numb something else. So if you are using porn, using sex to distract yourself or disconnect from an issue underneath, then that could be something that can turn problematic because we need other tools in the toolbox, the same way that ice cream cannot be the only solution for your anxiety or loneliness. So that is something that's important to keep in mind. Is it I'm trying to avoid something or I'm trying to experience sexual pleasure? So that is really important.
Yeah, and overuse of pornography, especially if you're watching it too much and masturbation in an unhealthy frequency level, that will increase the risk of having erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation.
Well, for some people, it's kind of like they get fixated on, I only need this kind of script for being able to have kind of like experience arousal. So that could be problematic, but for majority of people, there is not a strong correlation. There was this wonderful, interesting study that talked about many people who watch porn also struggle with premature ejaculation, but it was correlation, not causation, meaning that maybe if you have stress about coming too quickly, that's why you're watching porn.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is because sometimes when I talk to some of my clients, they have those cases where they're addicted to pornography and they ended up probably masturbate like 3 times a day and 7 days a week. And they ended up having some health issues. So that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like they're trying to cope with the problem with masturbation and leads to other issues.
Yeah, that's right. And they just complicate things.
That makes sense.
Right. And sometimes they would like to build stamina, especially when they found when there's something going wrong with their penis. They will try to build stamina with sex toys or even sex dolls. Well, it's perfectly fine if you're using it rightly. But sometimes when sex addiction and performance anxiety plays a role in it, they will lead to some issues of overusing these toys or sex dolls. And sometimes if you're in a relationship, there is this chance that your partner may feel unseen and invalidated.
That is correct. Yes.
Yes. Well, other things I noticed, like sometimes also sexual trauma is also going to play a very important role in intimacy. Well, how does that impact intimacy and relationships from a professional and clinical perspective?
Well, when we experience trauma, it can dysregulate our nervous system if we haven't addressed it, we haven't do therapy around it. So sometimes during sexual experiences, we might get triggered. And when we are triggered, we go at the place of where we were during the traumatic experience. So that could be one way trauma impacts our sexual experiences. The other way is if we had trauma in our past and it's not addressed, it's like a very sensitive fire detector, like smoke detector. So it goes on even when you're putting your candle on in your bedroom, right? So it can be a healthy thing. You want to have a smoke detector, but it needs to be adjusted. So if we are at the place of hypervigilant, we are constantly at fight and flight mode, and it's hard for us to relax. And in order to be able to get a firm erection or experience an erection, you need to be at the rest and digest part of your nervous system. So that could be part of it. The other part is relationship can be difficult for many people that experience trauma. They struggle relationally, and for many people, sex happens in the context of relationship, and that's another way of it can impacting people's sexual experiences.
Yes, and sometimes sex trauma is actually more complicated than we expected because it's not only like experiencing sex trauma. Some people came into a relationship with sex trauma, maybe because they witnessed some terrible things in their childhood, and that resulted in a lot of blockages psychologically and may eventually lead to some malfunction physically and make them like naturally rejecting like the partners or rejecting this sort of behavior. So sometimes if your partners are experiencing something related to sexual trauma, one great way is to make sure you have open conversation and seek for professional help and just to, renavigate his or her concepts about sex and reestablishing a healthy concept about it.
Yeah, so I think it's going back to having a right sex script, right? The belief that you have about sex, the stories you tell yourself about sex, those are also very important, as you mentioned.
Well, other questions I'd be really interested in, because when I read Dr. Molly's background, it's really rare that people approach sexology was from a clinical psychologist perspective. And so that leads to a question for me that is, how do you think about like sex fetish? Because I know for some analytical psychologists or psychiatrists, they think this is fetish is a sort of hysteria. How would you like explain it or justify this as a sexologist or a psychologist?
That's a great point. I know that many colleagues are psychoanalytic. They have those views of kind of being part of hysteria, or there's like a fixation about something unhealthy. But as a psychologist, I see that there is nothing as quote unquote normal sexual experiences. What people think about normal is like they think about common. But our sexuality is very, very diverse. And I would say that it's like our fingerprints. Like what we are into is very different. And as long as if you are interested in something that you're engaging in consensually, there's nothing wrong with it. So I don't see it from the lens of psychopathology. I think about the preference and like you're having this way of expressing sexuality that there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, like, I once watched a TV series called The Shameless. There's a guy in this show named himself Jody, and Jody is a sex addict, and he has a serious problem. And he even gave himself an aura sex, and has extreme like fetish, like letting people doing anal sex for him. I think there is the difference between sexual preference and fetishes, and I don't think fetish is necessarily like a disease. It's something more like a hobby, but as long as you control it and don't let it just happen to be something problematic, I think that's fine.
I agree with you. I think it's a matter of thinking about as long as you're engaging in it in a consensual way. You are doing it with people who are interested in. There is nothing wrong with that. It's another form of sex self-expression.
That's right. And a lot of times, like, people think about sex as something really instinctual and animal instincts, thinking about it's something related to fertility. It is. But Some may say like having sex is a way of power change for humans. Well, yeah, it's more about like emotional connection. A lot of psychological factors weigh in. And yes, I guess it's just very captivating.
Right, we can have sex for recreational reasons, we can have for procreation. So people have different motivation about having sex. And you're right that there's no right answer, right motivation for engaging in sexual experiences.
That's right. Well, I guess it's so much for today. So before we wrap up, Dr. Morali, would you mind letting us know where we can find you for more valuable insights about sexual relationships?
Well, thank you so much for having me in this show. It was my pleasure to be part of this conversation. People can find me at sexologypodcast.com, or they can search Sexology Podcast wherever they're listening to this show. We are on all platforms, and I'm also on Instagram with at Sexology Podcast, and I would be happy to connect with your audience and answer any question they might have.
All right, great. Well, thank you for coming to the show. And also, thank you for your patience for everything.
Okay, thank you so much. I
Thank you so
appreciate it.
much. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sexopedia. If you're interested in exploring more topics related to us, the adult industry, sex education, and relationship issues, please check out lovenestle.com. We have a wealth of information and resources that will satisfy your curiosity. Stay tuned for more captivating stories. Until next time.